now entering the truth zone, deep into the vortex of the information revolution with your host, Michael B.
My name is Michael B., and this is The Truth Zone, coming to you live from the North Dallas Metroplex in the state of Texas, USA. And today is Freaky Friday. Why not? So, yesterday I was semi-live, you know, and prepping for my colonoscopy, and good news, ladies and gentlemen, barring incidents unknown to us, Mikey B is going to be around for a little while longer. I've got a clean anus. The doctor was very impressed with my colon prep. He said my colon is in great shape. I'm looking good. I don't have to go back for 5 years, so Mikey B's pipes are running just beautifully on high octane. And again, he praised me for my prep. And I said, well, doc, I'm a by-the-book kind of guy, and I take care of business. And I said that right in front of my little new age honey who laughs at my due diligence. And doesn't even matter. And the doctor said, well, I appreciate your work. And I said, thank you, doctor. That's how I roll. And yes, ladies and gentlemen, that is how Michael B. rolls. That's why, outside of some domestic new age bullshit that I have to deal with, Michael B.'s life is rather smooth, actually. And it's actually very nice. So, your host leads by example. So, Wednesday and yesterday, I established the location of the Tower of Babel. I've established I've established the location of the Garden of Eden. I even showed you people that the oldest humanoid bones were found in the Bulgarian Greek sector surrounding the Black Sea, which I then gave you a Bible verse tying in the Tower of Babel located in Shinar that the people moved eastward. See, they moved eastward from point A, which right now we can deduce that point A for humanity seems to be in the Greek, Bulgarian, Turkish area surrounding the Black Sea. And the people moved east to Shinar. And the Tower of Babel was established, which is in southern Iraq. And I told you about that poor guy who spent over 20 years looking for it when the Bible gave it to us thousands of years ago. And we knew I knew the location, the poor guy. Well, we're going to talk about, in the opening, we're going to talk about Noah's Ark. Where, oh where, could Noah's Ark have been? And here's the thing about that, folks. People want to keep saying, we never found the boat. It can't be there. We never found the boat. Let's use some common sense, ladies and gentlemen. Okay. If you're 8 people, right? And you survived the biggest cataclysmic type flood ever seen by humanity. Okay? And the boat is no longer viable as a boat. You've come back to land. What's the first thing do you think that Noah and his people had to do? They didn't have to hunt, right? They've got every animal source that Jehovah Jireh, the Lord, will provide for. He did, right? So they didn't have to hunt. Obviously, after a flood of that proportion, they weren't short of water. They weren't short of companionship, right? They had each other. You had 4 men and 4 women that could get their freak on anytime they felt like it. So companionship wasn't an issue. The one thing, folks, that they had to then establish was shelter. The boat is no longer necessary. So, common sense would dictate you would start to dismantle that boat, right? I'm talking this way for the liberals and the atheists who are so intellectual. You start to break down the boat, and what do you think needs to be? Hey, how about at least 4 individual homes right off the bat? Because they're all adults, right? Then you'd think you would need some sort of supply hut for your goods. Then you would think, you know, to prepare for the future, you might have a weapons installation for hunting and what have you. So basically, you have to create a little community now. You already have cut up wood and mortar, do you not? Or did they use bitumen? I think they use bitumen, which is like a tarish-like substance, right? So naturally, you're not going to find a boat. You wouldn't. But let's not use reasoning. Let's not use discernment. Let's not use common sense. Let's just say, well, since we can't find the boat, it never happened. Just like as we'll get into, the horizon looked flat. Oh, the earth must be flat. Yeah, let's just deny what the Bible says, and we'll see who said what first. And let's forget about what science says. So Michael B., your host, doesn't shoot his mouth off without doing research first. And wouldn't you know it, I decided to do a map, look for a map of Mount Ararat, right? Because that's what the Bible says. And I'm going to post this map onto my main picture for my show when I share it to social media later on today. And I'll put it on Facebook. Look what you get. Wow. In the uppermost part of the map, you get Romania, Bulgaria, Greece, Russia, Georgia, Turkey, the Black Sea. You get the Mediterranean Sea. You get Egypt, Syria, Iraq, and Iran. Oh, wow, look. The Nile Delta. You get the Nile Delta, folks. So let's do this together, okay? The Bible, especially the Hebrew scriptures, are anywhere from 2500 when they ended in like 6th century before the Common Era all the way to the time when Moses, and I'm sure other compilers, well, Joshua, we know one for sure, right? Some 3,500 years ago. So you have between 2,500 and 3,500 years ago, say, the Hebrew scriptures were written, and they gave us exact locations, right? They gave us that. And they weren't scientists. They were practically cave dwellers. And they were tent dwellers. They were Stone Age and Iron Age individuals, right? So, the Bible gives us point A of man. We've seen it's the Nile Delta. Science, just this year, gives us a new point A for humanity, the Nile Delta. The Tower of Babel. The Bible tells us that after point A, people moved eastward. And in the land of Shinar in southern Iraq, the one world order, basically, a one world government was attempted. A man who did a show and was part of Miracles of the Bible, I believe that's the documentary, took 20 years to prove what the Bible said, right? So we've got where man's totalitarianism began. The Bible gives us that as well. And now, the Bible gives us where man survived God's wrath, which, again, would show why the oldest bones are showing up in the Nile Delta, the north part, right? Around the Black Sea. It would make sense, ladies and gentlemen. That's where Noah's Ark would be. And as man grew, again, he moved eastward. Not difficult. And after I'm done with Noah's Ark, I am going to show you who said the earth was round first. Did the Bible say it first? Or did science say it first? So, let's move on for the search of Noah's Ark. This comes from noahsarksearch.com. Mount Ararat is located in eastern Turkey on the borders of Iran, Armenia, formerly the USSR, and Nakhchivan. This volcanic mountain rises 5,165 meters or 16,000 plus feet high. Okay, we don't need all that. And is the highest location in the ancient territory of Urartu, a region which covered tens of thousands of square miles with hundreds of mountains. Ararat is the newer Armenian name of Urartu from the Hebrew Torah, written by Moses, and they give us circa 1400 BC. So, you know, either way, 3,500 years ago in that span. So, which only included the consonants RRT, because the Hebrew language didn't use vowels. However, the translators of the Bible replaced the RRT with the later name Ararat or Armenia. The Assyrian kings wrote about battles against the Urartian tribes from the 13th century BC until the 6th century BC when Urartu was destroyed by the Medes. The name Urartu then vanished from history. until archaeologists rediscovered it in the 1800s. So archaeologists rediscovered what the Bible already told you, and was replaced by Ararat and Armenia in the vicinity, as well as in English Bible translations, maps, etc. Mount Ararat may be the largest single mass or volume mountain in the world. Well, yeah. Yeah, and since it's the largest single mass or volume mountain, do you think then maybe it makes sense that the eight survivors of the worst cataclysmic flood in the history of recorded man would land there? Wow. I mean, that takes deductive reasoning. One really has to see it in person to appreciate it. Yeah, I bet. And it rises to 17,000 feet from the plains surrounding its 2,300 feet. So what we have here then, Ararat also has only a few native trees growing on it in Ahora Village. Shrubs around Karhan and several small forests on Little Ararat. So we move down to the article. We'll move down. Okay, so earliest historical reference to Noah's Ark being on Mount Ararat. The earliest obvious reference to the geography surrounding Noah's Ark landing on Mount Ararat is by the early church historian Philostorgius' account in 425 AD. The 2000 translation of Philostorgius was edited by Philip Amidon, originally from Joseph Bedez, except for the extracts from the Syriac Chronicles. Amidon emphasizes how Philostorgius made great use of the immense library resources of Constantinople in his writings, which should give us more confidence, thank you, in his geography. How is it that Philostorgius even knows that the Ark landed on the Armenian Mount Ararat in 425 if supposedly, as whoever this Bailey guy contends, no one could camp up with that idea until medieval times and no one ever made such an identification until then? Amidon states the following in the introduction. The learned and fervently Eunomian layman Philostorgius, born in Cappadocia, around 368, heartily detested such historiography, as may be imagined. This reference is to the Council of Nicaea's Nicene Creed, supporters like Rufinus, who translated and extended Massage de Subi. Okay, blah, blah, blah. Let's just get to it. The remnants of his writings show a lively intellectual curiosity encouraged by his sectarian creed, whose god is not the only hidden deity of Gnosticism, but one whose very substance can be known by human reason, directed aright. So let's move on a little further down. Philostorgius, in fact, groups into one Homoousian party all the Christians who opposed Eunomianism, whatever, is the same way as those of Nicene sympathies. Okay, this doesn't matter to us. Philostorgius stated the following about Noah's Ark and Mount Ararat in Book 3, as epitomized by, Photius, who according to Amidon is usually a careful if hostile epitomizer, and his editorial glosses can be usually detected. The Persian Gulf, which is formed by the ocean as it enters there, is huge and is encircled by many nations. The Tigris is one of the enormous rivers that empty their streams at its mouth. This was it's translated from whatever. The Tigris seems to have its source in the east, south of the Caspian Sea in Corduena, and it flows past Syria. But when it arrives in the region of Susa, the Euphrates joins its current to it, and so it boils onward, swollen now to a great size. Hence, they say it is called Tigris, after the animal. But before it descends to the sea, it divides into two great rivers. Then it empties into the Persian Gulf from these two mouths at its end, which are divided from each other. It is inhabited by people called Messenes. As for the Euphrates River, it appears to take its rise in Armenia, where Mount Ararat is. The mountain is still called by that name by the Armenians. It is where, according to scripture, the ark came to rest. And they say that considerable remnants of its wood and nails are still preserved there. And again, Noah and his people, most likely, common sense tells you, they would dismantle the ark and make a little community out of it. From there, the Euphrates starts as a small stream at first, growing ever larger as it advances and sharing its name with the many rivers that empty into it. Oh, you mean like the four river heads in the book of Genesis? Probably. So we move on down. Given the extensive research which has taken place on Mount Ararat, it seems fair to say that if Noah's Ark survived into modern times and is somewhere on Ararat, there are a few new places remaining on the mountain to search, unless it is buried under the ice cap or lava. No. It was used to build their homes. It makes sense. So, therefore, ladies and gentlemen, I have given you three occurrences and the same location continues to arise. Man's point A, as told by the Bible, written some 3,500 years ago at least. The beginning of humanity. The beginning of an empire. Where humanity began after the flood. It all encircles the same location. From Greece and Bulgaria, surrounding the Black Sea of the North Nile Delta, and then the people moved eastward into Mesopotamia, and the first empire under Nimrod was established in southern Iraq. So, let's move on to the shape of the earth. We have flat earth theorists now. And I know when I played that clip yesterday for you in my absence, I told you people, there's some good stuff. There's some great knowledge in that clip. I hope you enjoyed it. I also told you there's going to be some woohoo stuff out there. And, you know, that guy mentioned aliens and whatnot. Well, until Mork from Ork shows up and goes nanu nanu on my TV screen, I'm going to hold off. I'm going to stick with these are demonic fallen angels deceiving us. And this other UFO aircraft stuff, I'm going to stick with that it's DARPA and it's Black Ops, and they've been testing future technologies on us for decades. I'm going to leave it at that until I'm proven wrong. And that's all I'm going to say about that. So he went on to say, well, the horizon looks flat. Yeah, that makes sense. Well, I've got two clips for you, ladies and gentlemen, that are going to debunk this flat earth BS. So, I'm going to give you two records of the earth claiming to be round. And I'm going to give you two names. And then I'm going to give you their dates of writing. And you will see who came first. So, who figured that the Earth was round? Answer. It has actually been known that the Earth was round since the time of the ancient Greeks. I believe that it was, and this is the author, I believe that it was Pythagoras who first proposed the Earth was round sometime around, and I'll wait. As I recall, he based his idea on the fact that he showed the moon must be round by observing the shape of the terminator, the line between the part of the moon in light and the part of the moon in the dark. It is moved through its orbital cycle. Pythagoras reasoned that if the moon was round, then the Earth must be round as well. After that, sometime between, a fellow called Anaxagoras determined the true cause of solar and lunar eclipses. And then the shapes of the Earth's shadow on the moon during a lunar eclipse was also used as evidence that the Earth was round. Around blank, the great Aristotle declared that the Earth was a sphere based on observations he made about which constellations you could see in the sky as you traveled further and further away from the equator. And during the next 100 years or so, Aristarchus and Aristophanes actually measured the size of the Earth. And the Earth's circumference is 24,901 miles. Let's also remember the great explorers of the Renaissance. Did they not show through maps and just through sight of the mast coming up first or over the Earth before you see the entire ship? So that was Pythagoras and the other Greeks. I'm now going to take you to a Bible verse. This is the book of Isaiah. He sits enthroned upon the circle of the earth, and its people are like grasshoppers. He stretches out the heavens like a canopy and spreads them out like a tent to live in. So God sits above the circle of the earth. So now we must determine what came first, the chicken or the egg. While it is widely accepted that Isaiah the prophet did not write the entire book, and again, all supposition. We don't know that. We don't know that for sure. We weren't there. But here's what's relevant. There are good reasons to see parts of chapters 1 through 39 as stemming from the historic Isaiah ben Amoz, who lived in the kingdom of Judah during the reigns of four kings from the mid to late 8th century BCE. So, 8th century BCE. Now, I don't know how these theologians who were not there determine that 1 through 39 is Isaiah's. And of course, conveniently, I'm reading to you Isaiah 40, the next chapter over, verse 22, showing you that the earth was a circle. So, one chapter or not, even the Bible, who had no instruments at their disposal, told you the earth was a circle. Pythagoras and company didn't come around and didn't accept or discover that the earth was indeed round until the 5th century BCE. So the Bible tells you the earth is round some 200 years before all of us accept, well, the Greeks knew everything. They were scientists. Well, you know, they have to be right. Their stuff is accurate. Their stuff is true. The Bible has to be false, but the Bible presented you basically, right, the shape of the earth 200 years before the people that you take stock in, non-believers and atheists. So, science, after the fact, proves the Bible correct. First humans, Upper Nile Delta. That's a win. Noah's Ark and the surviving humanoids, humans, that's a win. The first human empire set up, location, that's a win. And the Bible said the earth was round first, that's a win. And for you flat earthers that continue to be stubborn, for the remainder of the show, I'm going to give you 2 audio clips that, well, you're just going to look a little bit foolish. Here we go with clip 1.
Hey, here are 5 stupid things I've noticed about flat earth theory. It's so obviously, painfully wrong. The major flaw in flat earth theory, which posits that planet Earth is not a spheroid object, but rather a flat disk, is that Earth is not a flat disk. It's definitely a spheroid object. We know this for a fact. We can be as certain of that fact as about any other fact in the entire body of scientific knowledge. The Earth is not flat, period. Why, then, are there still some people who consider flat Earth theory to be valid? Are they just trolling? Being contrarian purely for the sake of it? Maybe, but there are reasons why some might sincerely believe that flat Earth theory is correct. Not good reasons, but understandable reasons. And the first of those reasons is what might be the most seductive thing about flat Earth theory. It accepts the obvious but incorrect answer. Most of the time, Earth does look flat. Assuming you're standing on Earth, I should say, looking at Earth from space or even just from several miles up, it quite obviously is not flat. But if you're standing on the ground, looking out toward the horizon, Earth looks pretty flat. But, and this is the important point, it's not flat. The obvious answer is not actually the correct answer. Flat Earth theory only makes sense if you accept the most immediately obvious answer to the question and don't investigate any further than that. And just think of all the scientific discoveries we would never have made if that's the way we approached questions, if we just accepted the first answer that looked good and didn't probe any deeper than that. And that brings me to the next problem with flat Earth theory, which is that it disregards centuries of accumulated scientific evidence. We've known Earth is round for a long time, and there are all sorts of simple, cool ways to demonstrate this that people have figured out over the last couple of thousand years. For example, Foucault's pendulums, which are on display in museums and universities all around the world, demonstrate that Earth is rotating. Now, you take this evidence of rotation and you combine it with the consistently curved shadow that Earth casts on the surface of the moon during lunar eclipses, and you have a pretty solid case, based on observation, for a round, spinning Earth. Or, how about something even simpler? The fact that constellations change depending on which region of Earth from which you're observing the sky. Or how about the fact that the position of the sun in the sky at the same time of day differs depending on where on Earth's surface you are observing it from? Both of those are consistent with a round Earth, not a flat Earth. Or how about the fact that people have been to outer space and orbited the Earth countless times and directly observed that it is, in fact, a spheroid object, not a flat disk? How can flat Earth theory possibly stand up in the face of these and all the other pieces of evidence for a round Earth? Well, it relies on incuriosity and willful ignorance. You can't just casually dismiss the evidence for a round Earth because it is everywhere and it is undeniable. Rejecting such a firmly established, fundamental fact of science requires a stubborn unwillingness to be taught and a determined embracing of one's own ignorance. You have to ignore calculus, geometry, geology, astronomy, as well as the aforementioned direct observational evidence. And amazingly, there are some who do, which is the only reason I'm even talking about something as asinine as flat Earth theory. There are people who seem to actually believe it, including the most notable recent proponent of flat Earth theory, B.O.B., who had a hit song several years ago titled Airplanes, which is ironically fitting since looking out the window of an airplane cruising at about 40,000 feet with good visibility is an excellent way to view the curvature of Earth. To believe that the Earth is flat, you also have to believe that all the evidence for a round Earth has either been fabricated or grossly misinterpreted, and that we have all had it really, really wrong for thousands of years, because people have known that Earth is round since at least the time of Pythagoras. Thinking that doesn't just make you wrong. It makes you a conspiracy theorist. You can't get more wrong than that. The hardest part is only picking five. Catch you next time. Hey, folks. Well, I hope you enjoyed this one.
Now, you see how he says, since Pythagoras. Wrong. I told you that, right? Isaiah. And by the way, if anyone tries to stumble me, as I mentioned about the first chapters, 1 through 39, there's a theory that a second Isaiah finished off chapters 40 to 55, which included that circle of the earth verse in chapter 40. So while the clip was running, I did a little research. Even if there was a second Isaiah that finished off the book and started at verse 40, that second Isaiah is believed to have been also a Hebrew captive during the Babylonian captivity. Okay? You may ask yourselves, well, when was the Babylonian captivity? The Babylonian exile, also called Babylonian captivity, the forced detention of Jews in Babylonia following the latter's conquest of the kingdom of Judah in 598 or 597 and 587 to 586 BCE. The exile formally ended in 538 BCE, when Cyrus the Great of Persia gave them permission for the Jews to return. Well, they're saying here Palestine. There never was a Palestine nation. So, even if there was a second Isaiah, he was still before Pythagoras. Pythagoras was at the end of the 6th century CE into the 5th century CE. His writings were sometime between no earlier than 530 BCE. No earlier. Because the Earth was first proposed that it was around sometime around 500. See? Almost 100 years after, even if there was a second Isaiah. Almost 100 years after. But, ladies and gentlemen, it gets even better. It gets even better. I did even a little more digging into the Bible during that clip. And look what I found here. The book of Job, which is universally accredited to Moses himself. And we've established that was some 3,500 years ago. Job 26:10 says, "He has inscribed a circle on the face of the waters at the boundary between light and darkness." He has inscribed a circle, not a flat surface on the face of the waters, but a circle. So the guy in the first clip says, "We've known that the earth is round since the time of Pythagoras." No. Ancient Hebrews have known for 3,500 years that the earth was round because Jehovah Jireh told Moses that fact. Man has known that the earth was round since he was able to write words. That's just the facts. So, I want to play you this second clip, and it's amusing. And we should end kind of on an amusing note, because it's Friday, ladies and gentlemen. So here we go with the flat earth conspiracy debunked, and then we will conclude the show.
As a YouTuber who debunks arguments, I'm forever receiving requests to take on certain subjects, and most of the time, they're related to religion. Thank you, by the way. But recently, a great many of you have asked me to take on the Flat Earth movement, and I can only assume that this is because you couldn't get enough of Cosmic Skeptic's excellent video on the subject. Because before Alex very kindly gave me a shout-out, by the way, thank you again, Alex, I had never received a single request to take on this subject, but now I'm inundated with them. But then again, perhaps the Flat Earth movement has just become the hottest topic under the sun, or firmament. In either case, I've decided to oblige, and so this is the Flat Earth Conspiracy Debunked. For those of you unaware, the Flat Earth Conspiracy asserts that the Earth is flat, and that consequently, all of the evidence for a global Earth is either invalid or part of a grand conspiracy. This includes all photos that depict the curvature of the globe, GPS devices, the trajectory of the sun, moon, planets and stars, moon phases, lunar eclipses and time zones. But it doesn't just stop there. By implicit extension, proponents also denounce Einstein's theory of general relativity, most of physics and astrophysics, and on occasion, even evolution by natural selection. It really is the motherlode of conspiracies, because it insists that all scientists from all countries and that all governments have, and are, perpetuating this enormous conspiracy in order to either somehow profit financially, or, I kid you not, to make the average citizen reject the Abrahamic God. Now, needless to say, there are thousands of proofs offered by Flat Earth proponents, and to address them all would take a significant amount of time and would bore even the most intrigued Flat Earth enthusiast. And so what I've decided to do is to address what I believe is the root of the conspiracy, and at the same time, cover a few of the most prominent arguments. This root is, in my opinion, one unfortunate fact and two particular fallacies. The unfortunate fact is that our education system has failed us. Or as Neil deGrasse Tyson puts it,
This is a deep failure of our educational system. There's something deeper going on in our society that somehow enables people to believe they're making cogent arguments when they're not.
They're not!
And so, you know why? I think it is. The way we teach science is you're just some empty vessel and we pour the science into you and then you regurgitate it on an exam.
Right.
Whereas science is a way of thinking. It's a way of understanding and probing the operations of nature.
And the two particular fallacies are as follows.
See, now I'm gonna interject right there. You see, I'm gonna agree, yet disagree. And I know who that guy is. You've seen him. He's done a lot of Netflix documentaries, or should I say, the documentaries are on Netflix. He's a metaphysical person and quantum physics and absolutely fine. You know, I get all that, but I'm gonna agree, but disagree. See, I don't have to, as a believer, and knowing that the word is true, I don't rely on human scientists to tell me about the laws of nature. I don't need scientists to tell me about the earth. Because, see, here's the problem when we rely just on the word of man. We see this in our everyday lives. For political and monetary gain, and this goes back thousands of years, since recorded history. I mean, this goes back to the Roman Empire. This goes back to the popes. I mean, everybody. Science and nature spat out by man can be influenced by political and monetary gain. I rely on what the Bible says, and I rely on the wisdom and discernment that I have been given by God. And yes, I believe that. Which is why I've been able to present to you this whole week what I've been able to present. I do what the Bible says as best as I can. Do I make mistakes? Yeah, because when I rely on my own so-called wisdom, or I rely on the wisdom of man, I've had bad things happen to me personally. When I rely on Scripture, when I rely on Jehovah Jireh's discernment and Holy Spirit, things seem to go better. So I don't just spit out what I've been told on an exam. He's right. We have robots in school now that just spit out what the teacher tells them, and if you could spit it out the best, you get the highest grade. But when it comes to self-teaching and self-motivation, sorry, it isn't there, and that's why we have drones. And the Soviet Union knew that 100 years ago, which is why they gave easy divorce, which is why they created gender wars, all to get the child away from the parents and for the parents to be distracted so the state can do its mind control and create zombies. It is because something sparked in me that drove me these last 25 years to have the discernment and the wisdom to say, hey, it's already in the Bible. Like, God created male and female. Done. There's no transgender nonsense. There's no alternative lifestyle, you were born that way, in homosexuality. The Bible never said it. Science never said it. Psychology never said it until they got bullied and strong-armed. Until they got paid to say it. And I'm not going to rant on that. I'm just showing you that I don't rely on the next greatest scientific face. I expected science someday to show us that the first humanoid bones would be somewhere in the Nile Delta. It just happened to be north. I expected it. I expected some scientist, and I feel bad for the guy, that he took over 25 years to show us, to verify the location of the first one-world government, the first empire, the first totalitarian kingdom to be in southern Iraq. I expected it. I expected these things. I expected science to prove what the Bible told its readers 3,500 years ago, that the earth was round. I expected these things. And I expect, as years to come, science and history will prove the Bible even more correct. Or should I say, science and history will add more references just verifying what we believers already know. I expected these things. So let's continue with the clip.
The first is the common sense fallacy, which occurs when someone appeals to first-hand sensory experience, normally being eyesight, as if it's infallible. And the second is the personal incredulity fallacy, which occurs when someone is either unaware of how something works or finds something difficult to understand, and therefore asserts that it can't be true. For example, the Flat Earth Society states that the evidence for a flat earth is derived from many facets of science and philosophy. The simplest is by relying on one's own senses to discern the true nature of the world around us. The world looks flat. The bottom of clouds are flat. The movement of the sun. These are all examples of your senses telling you that you do not live on a spherical, heliocentric world. Now, to be fair, many of these assertions are true. Our senses do in general tell us that the Earth is flat. But here's the thing. They also tell us that this image is moving, but it's not. They tell us that these two red lines are different sizes, but they're not. And they tell us that these lines are bent, but again, they're not. The point being here is that arguments that appeal to our perception and senses, such as the assertion that the Earth looks flat, that clouds look flat, and that stars don't move, all commit the common sense fallacy, because they act as if our senses can't be mistaken, when, as we've just proven, they clearly can. Our senses can be fooled, and therefore they are not reliable. This is something that should be very clearly demonstrated in schools. Moving on, and to highlight an example where both the common sense fallacy and the personal incredulity fallacy are particularly potent, let's take on perhaps the most common flat earth argument, the assertion that the horizon is flat. Whether we're looking at the horizon from the ground, a high mountain, or even a plane, it appears to be completely flat. There is no curvature. Now, the problem with this argument is that proponents of the flat earth model, and indeed many proponents of the spherical earth model, seem to think that we should be able to see a horizontal curve, when we really shouldn't. The earth is just too big, we are too small, and our perspective won't allow us to see a horizontal curve unless we are extremely high up. And indeed, if we go to extreme heights, we can clearly see a curved horizon. Countless space enterprises, and even unbiased citizens using a camera tied to a balloon, have captured breathtaking non-fisheye photos and videos of this curvature. But flat earth proponents simply assert that they're all part of the conspiracy, including inquisitive children. Luckily, however, we don't need these photos and videos to prove that the earth is curved, just as those before the advent of these technologies didn't either. For example, one way in which you can personally see the vertical curvature of the Earth is to view an object that is beyond the horizon, such as this island, from one height and then again from another height. As you can see, the only factor changing here is the height. The equipment and the zoom are exactly the same, meaning that the Earth curves or that the water is also part of the conspiracy. Hence, the argument that the horizon is curved, like most flat Earth arguments, commits a common sense fallacy and a personal incredulity fallacy. It commits a common sense fallacy because it asserts that because you can't see a curve in the horizon with your own eyes, it's therefore flat. And it commits a personal incredulity fallacy because proponents are either unaware of how to witness the Earth's curvature, or they don't understand how to, and they therefore assert that there isn't one. Another prominent flat Earth argument that embodies the common sense and personal incredulity fallacy is the assertion that crepuscular rays, otherwise known as sunbeams, prove that the sun isn't 93 million miles away, but rather it's just above the clouds. The argument is simple. As this photo shows, and as you've likely seen countless times before, sunbeams clearly appear to converge at a point just above the clouds, and therefore the sun is just above the clouds. Now, this argument commits a common sense fallacy because it asserts that seeing a convergence point just above the clouds proves, without a doubt, that the sun is indeed just above the clouds. And it commits a personal incredulity fallacy because the proponents are either unaware or don't understand basic atmospheric optics, and they therefore denounce them entirely. Which brings us back to the problem with our education system. With these fallacies clearly pointed out, let's explain what's really going on here. In short, and as Alex very clearly explained in his video, it's a matter of perspective. If we look down a straight railway, such as this one, our perspective converges at a single point on the horizon. And if we were to trust our eyes alone, we would conclude that the railway starts at this singularity, just as many conclude that the sun is just above the clouds. However, the reason that we don't conclude that the railway starts at this vanishing point is simply because we've experienced two-dimensional horizontal perspectives our whole life, and we've evolved to unconsciously know that our vision is mistaken. But on the other hand, we've rarely experienced three-dimensional perspectives that don't converge on the horizon, and we haven't evolved to recognise them when we do. And hence, this is why sunbeams can fool us into thinking that the sun is just above the clouds. What's more, and what just has to be said, is that this argument is just intellectually lazy. If the sun was truly just above the clouds, you could simply drive a couple of miles towards the convergence point and be directly beneath the sun, meaning that you could have one flat Earth proponent viewing the sunbeams from one point, and another flat Earth proponent beneath the first proponent's convergence point, and when the second proponent says that the sun isn't above him, they can both start arguing over which of them is part of the conspiracy. Now, we could go on here indefinitely, slowly but surely debunking every flat Earth argument. But to reiterate what I stated earlier, this wouldn't defeat the flat Earth conspiracy, because the problem, the crux, isn't these arguments, it's the education system. We need to teach people how to think and why they ought to value science, rather than what to think and how to regurgitate science. If we do this, the flat Earth conspiracy, like many conspiracies, will indeed collapse. But until then, they aren't going anywhere. So, to recap, the vast majority of flat Earth arguments either commit a common sense fallacy, a personal incredulity fallacy, both, and in some cases, if I'm honest, laziness. If someone is truly serious about this conspiracy, they owe it to themselves to buy a decent pair of binoculars and to go to the seaside and find an object that is beyond the horizon. That is to say, not on or near the horizon, it has to be beyond the horizon. And then view that object by standing on a chair and then immediately afterwards by crouching on the ground. But most proponents won't do this, and that, in my opinion, is very telling. And finally, I want to address a potential elephant in the room. You might be wondering, why on this spherical Earth have I taken on this conspiracy? Well, the answer is an exact echo of cosmic skeptic sentiments. Likewise to most conspiracies, absent healthy opposition, flat Earth arguments could be quite persuasive.
And so incredulous people might be prone to the danger of adopting these beliefs because there's no serious opposition to them. And if we just laugh these things off and say, oh, well, it's ridiculous, let's not waste our time on them, then people who are beginning to become seduced by flat Earth conspiracies, for instance, might just fall all the way down the rabbit hole.
Anyhow, as always, thank you kindly for the view. And I'll leave you with this amateur rocket capturing the curvature of the Earth at 121,000 feet.
So, there you have it, ladies and gentlemen. And quite frankly, you know, it's just common sense. It's just common sense. The Earth is round. The solar system, the planetoids, they're all round with depth. The Bible came first. Jehovah Jireh came first. My name is Michael B. This is the Truth Zone. You have been armed against the Satanists. See you Monday, 10 a.m. Central Time.